Welcome to Bina, KALW's program featuring creative voices from the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. In this series, we bring you remarkable artists and thinkers who've come to speak at the JCCSF as part of our Arts and Ideas program. On this edition of Bina, our guests are two of America's beloved authors, Jody Pico and Judy Blume, discussing Pico's new novel, The Book of Two Ways. And now, join journalist Holly Furfer as she introduces our guests.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome. My name's Holly Furfer. I'm with CNN, and tonight I am so excited and so honored to be with two iconic women for tonight's New York Times bestselling author, Jody Pico, and she's in conversation with another iconic number one bestselling author. We all know her, Ms. Judy Blume. And the two will be discussing Jody's new book, her latest novel, The Book of Two Ways. Today's moderator, Judy Blume, is the iconic author of Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, Blubber. And she also wrote Just As Long As We're Together and the five-book series about the irrepressible fudge, beginning with Tales of a Fourth Grade Nothing. Judy also has written novels for adults that include Wifey, Smart Women, Summer Sisters, and her most recent, In the Unlikely Event, and all of them New York Times bestsellers. And Judy and her husband, George Cooper, longing for a bookstore in Key West where they live, founded the independent nonprofit bookstore, Books and Books at the Studios. And our featured author, Jody Pico, is the number one New York Times bestselling author of 26 novels, including Small Great Things, A Spark of Light, Leaving Time, The Storyteller, Lone Wolf, Sing You Home, House Rules, Handle with Care, Change of Heart, 19 Minutes, and My Sister's Keeper. She's the author with daughter Samantha Van Leer of two young adult novels, Between the Lines and Off the Page. And by the way, that has been adapted into a Broadway-bound musical. So Jody has three children. She lives in New Hampshire with her husband. And before we welcome them to your living room, we have a short video we'd like to show you.
Hi, I'm Jody Pico. I love meeting my readers all over the world on my book tours. While I'm not able to travel to you right now, for the first time, you can come to me, and I'm so excited to talk about my new book together. My new novel, The Book of Two Ways, began as a series of questions. Who would you be if you aren't who you are now? What if your life had taken a different turn? For all of us, there's something or someone who got away. What if you had the chance for a do-over? Years ago, my eldest son, Kyle, an Egyptology major, was learning about an ancient text called the Book of Two Ways. Without knowing anything about it, I said, "That's a great title for a novel." Digging deeper, I learned the Book of Two Ways is the first known map of the afterlife, with two potential routes, water or land, that lead to the same spot, the Field of Offerings, or the ancient Egyptian version of heaven. I decided to create a novel around this metaphor, following a woman who suffers a near-death experience when her plane goes down. As her life flashes before her eyes, instead of seeing her husband and her daughter and her work in Boston, she envisions what she left behind 15 years earlier, a career in Egyptology and another man she loved. After she survives the crash, she is at a crossroads and reconsiders the life she didn't choose. My research took me from the tombs of Middle Egypt to the bedsides of those in hospice and the professionals who care for them. I realized we've been asking the same question for the past 4,000 years. Will you be happy at the end of your life? The answer is hinted at on the walls of those ancient Egyptian tombs, which feature pictures of the deceased fishing and fowling, dancing, making beer and bread, being with family. The way to have a good death, then and now, is to live a good life. I never expected to be publishing this book during a pandemic, but it may actually be the perfect time for us to push pause and take stock of our lives. How did you get where you are? Would you rather be somewhere else? What in your life matters most? I hope my novel allows you to think about the forks on your own path and the roads you did and didn't take. Do we make choices, or do our choices make us? Let's find out together.
Hello.
Hello, Judy. How are you?
Hello, Jody. Hi, I'm very excited. A little bit nervous, but excited to be talking to you.
There is no way you could be more excited than I am right now.
Okay, let's.
I have to tell you, can I tell you a story before we get started? Because I wanted to tell you this story for a long time. So like everybody else on the planet, I grew up reading your books. I, in fact, right now have a daughter that teaches fourth grade. You know, so she tells me a lot about her little fourth grade nothings. And when I was reading all your books, I got to be a preteen. And then you published a book called Forever. And my mother said to me, you are not reading that book because it was a grown-up book. And she didn't think I was ready for that book. So, you know, I was, I don't know, maybe 12, 13 at the time. I have never read Forever. Because my mother told me not to.
So, no way. I'm telling you,
what I'm hoping for tonight is that you'll give me your blessing so that I can say to my mom, you know, Judy said I can read it now.
I give you my blessing and I'll send you a book just for you. Yes.
Can't wait. I've read everything else, all your other adult books, but that was the one I was supposed to stay away from.
That was never an adult book. That was the publisher who didn't know what to do with it. You know, today it would be published YA.
Right,
but
I know.
Then, but it was really meant, it was dedicated to my daughter when she was 14.
Wow. So my mother, what we're really saying is my mother was wrong. Let's just put that out.
Your mother would. Yeah, but that's okay. We love her anyway.
I do love her.
But now you're definitely old enough.
Thank you. Thank you. I feel blessed.
I mean, come on. We could talk about the sex in your new book. It's pretty great. It's pretty great.
Clearly, eventually, I got to read something that taught me how to write that stuff. So,
I mean, how do we learn to write, Jody? We learn to write
by reading.
When people say, and kids ask me, well, how do you learn to be a writer? You read.
Absolutely. That's what I always say. I say you have to read everything out there so you can figure out where your work is going to fit into a literary canon. And, you know, I'm still a big reader. I think most writers are really big readers. But
I think so too. I think we're in trouble if we don't.
Right. But you were very much a large part of growing up for me. So this is truly an honor beyond honors.
Thank you. Thank you. So let's talk about the Book of Two Ways.
All right, let's do
it. And now, of course, all the questions that I had were answered in that wonderful video. But don't worry, I don't believe that. I have more. I have more. Yes, I will just say this, that I loved it. And I think, I mean, it's hard to talk about, we can't talk about the specifics so much because we don't want to do any spoilers here. And this is a book that has twists and turns, which I love when I'm reading a book. I think book clubs are absolutely going to go crazy for this book because, and again, I can't do the spoiler thing, but they are going to get hot and heavy over certain things that happen and question why they happen.
Yeah.
And that's terrific, but we can't talk about that because we don't want to spoil this. When you're writing your novels, or let's say this novel in particular, did you pretty much know what was going to happen, or did those characters come in and surprise you?
So the answer to that is both. And for this particular book, I can kind of tell you where this book came from for me. It came from two different places. The very first moment was years ago when my son Kyle, who you saw in that beautiful video, was an Egyptology major, and he came home with this book, you know, called The Book of Two Ways. And he was translating it for Middle Egyptian. And I was like walking by and I said, oh, The Book of Two Ways, that sounds like a great name for a novel. Like that was it. I was just walking through the room.
Right,
I knew nothing about it. Yeah. And I did wind up learning about The Book of Two Ways. The reason that The Book of Two Ways is known in ancient Egyptology is it is found in the coffins of nobles in the Middle Kingdom of Egypt. And it's famous because it was the first known map of the afterlife.
that we have. And you would find it underneath the mummy inside the coffin. And it was basically these two wavy roots, a blue one, which was water, and a black one, which was land. And the deceased could take either path as long as they had the knowledge from the spells that were written in hieroglyphs all over the coffin. They would get to the same place, which is that view of heaven, that field of offerings. But the idea that you could take two different routes and wind up in the same place was really interesting to me. So I started to think about how that could play into a novel. And of course, that is what my main character, Dawn, is studying when she is an Egyptology grad student 15 years ago. But I also was thinking a lot about how when you, I used to do this at readings when I could see everyone's faces instead of in a Zoom room. I used to say things like, I want you to close your eyes and I want you to imagine the person you thought you'd wind up with. And I would say 95% of you are not imagining the person you're going home to tonight. And I think that's really interesting that all of us have someone or something that we wonder about. We think, what would my life be like if I pursued that path or that person instead? And, you know, I'm 54 years old. I'm clearly old enough to read forever. And I'm also old enough to be looking forward, but also looking backward. And that is what led me to create this story about a woman kind of caught in the crossroads of her own decisions. You know, if you had a chance for a do-over, would you take it? And if you did, would the outcome be what you think it might be?
Do you think that that has anything to do with why so many people I know, either after a divorce or after a death, they then go back, they go to a high school reunion and they meet the person who they thought was the great love, and they get together and now they wind up together, which I have always found fascinating, how many people do that.
Yeah, I think you do hear stories about that all the time. I don't know that it would work for everyone, you know, because
I think so.
The freaking thing is that if you took a different path in life, other people's lives would also have been different. You would not be the same person you are now if you had not taken the path that you're on. And one of the things I really like about this book, you know, we were joking about the sex in it. There was a lot of sex to write in this book, but there also was, it's two kinds of love. It's the whirlwind romantic Indiana Jones romance of Egypt with a man named Wyatt. Or it's the very stable, secure, safe, eternal, respectful married love that Dawn has with her husband, Brian. And the interesting thing is that that's not really an either or. I think when we're in a really safe, secure situation, you know, that kind of loving relationship, we imagine what it would be like to be in a whirlwind romance. But when we're in a whirlwind romance, what we really want is to settle down. You know, so you kind of always want what you don't have. And I think that's a really fascinating thing to play around with. And I do hope that book clubs, you know, come to blows over it. I think they're
going
to be stalking their Facebook exes. That's what I think is going to happen.
So. And that there is another side to this book besides Egypt and Indiana Jones and great sex and love. There is also Dawn's life as a death doula. So I had never heard of a death doula. Mm-hmm. And now I know I want one for when my time comes. Yeah. I want Dawn. Does that mean I want Jody? Okay, I want Jody. But that was very interesting. So tell us, you know, something about that. Sure. Because I have to tell you, Jody, this is very, very personal. So when I was reading this, a dear friend of mine was dying.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, but you know, it was like many of the people that Dawn as a death doula sits with and takes on during this hard time. And so that part of it was lovely. And, so where did that come from, the death doula?
So when I started to put together the book and I was thinking, you know, about Dawn as a character. And I was thinking, here's a woman who expected to lead a life where she was going to be exploring how ancient Egyptians approached the end of life, because that's really what their tombs were all about. And hopefully we can talk a little bit more about some of that research in a little bit too. But if you didn't wind up doing that, how might those sensibilities play out in another career? And I realized that I wanted Dawn to still be helping people transition at the end of their life. And I started to think about hospice, and I was very fortunate because I was able to shadow a hospice chaplain for a week in Texas. And I met with him, I met with death doulas, I met with lots of people who were dying. I was in their homes as they were dying. And, you know, what you need to know about a death doula, because a lot of people don't know about it, is they are kind of like one-stop shopping for death. So if you are in hospice, you will have a hospice nurse and a hospice chaplain and a hospice social worker and a doctor, and it's like a whole team of people. A death doula is one person who does everything except the medical care. So a death doula might help you organize your finances before you die. A death doula might help you sell a car that you want to sell before you pass away. She might close out your social media accounts when you're gone. She might organize your lingerie drawer if that's what you want. She will help you decide if you want to have a green burial, an alkaline burial in a vat of acid, if you want to be buried in the living forest, if you want to donate your body to science, which sometimes means, you know, that you're a cadaver at a med school, but also can mean that you are butt and lip filler, just so you know. And, you know, she's helping you learn all this, and she's helping you make choices at the end of your life when you don't have a lot of choices left. So I was able to spend time with people who are at the end of their lives. And I have to tell you, it's such a privilege to be in a room with someone who doesn't have a lot of time left, who's sharing it with you. It was really deeply moving. And what I learned very quickly was that the people who are dying want you to be the repository of their stories. So, you know, there was one woman who came in, and I came to her, and she asked me if I was the angel who was there to take her away. There was another one who told us about how she drove a getaway car for a group called Food, Not Bombs, when she was younger. There was someone else who confessed that he had killed his childhood best friend. Like, all this stuff comes out at the end of life. And I also realized that we tend to be very scared about being with someone who's dying because we think we're going to screw up. We're going to say the wrong thing. There are definitely some things you shouldn't say to someone who is dying. You shouldn't say, I totally get it. My grandmother died last year. Because that's putting them in a position where they are then comforting you, and you don't want to do that. Don't say, you're going to beat this, because guess what? If they're in hospice, they're not going to beat it. don't be sad about being sad or not talking about their illness, because sometimes that's one of the only choices that these people have, is to have a normal afternoon where you're not talking about how sick you are. And don't be afraid to screw up. It's more important to be there than to do or say the right thing. But there are five things that you should say to someone who's dying. And you need to take these any way that it fits your personal relationship with the person. You should say, I forgive you. Will you forgive me? Thank you. I love you. And goodbye. And if you can understand how that plays out in your individual relationship with the person, you will not leave anything left unsaid, which is kind of beautiful. And I think it leaves you at a nice end point. I also learned that nobody expects to die, not even people who have terminal diagnoses. They're always like, how did this happen so fast? And nobody wants to be remembered the way they are at the end of their life. They want to be remembered for who they used to be. And perhaps most interestingly, the question that we ask now when we're dying or sick is the same question the ancient Egyptians were asking 4,000 years ago, which is, how do you have a good death? And even more amazingly, the answer is the same. You have a good life.
And how do you have a good life?
Well, I think that's for everyone to figure out. And the interesting thing, maybe I could talk a little bit about Egypt here, because I think they really had it right. I was able to visit Middle Egypt in the company of Kyle's old thesis advisor. Her name is Dr. Colleen Darnell. She is one of the foremost Egyptologists in the United States. Her husband, John Darnell, runs the Egyptology program at Yale. So they're like this power team. They're kind of like Indiana Jones and his wife, basically. And she took me on a very tailored trip to learn what I needed to learn for this book and to study the Book of Two Ways.
You're listening to author Jodi Picco, whose new book is The Book of Two Ways. She's joined in conversation by author Judy Blume. I'm Bina, a series featuring creative voices from the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. Bina is also available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org.
And when you go to tombs in the Middle Kingdom, it's really Middle Egypt. It's really interesting because that's not on tourist itineraries. Nobody ever goes there. So you get to see things that most tourists don't get to see. These are rock cut tombs. And when you walk in, you realize pretty quickly that there are two parts of a tomb. There's a public part and there's a very private part. And the public part is the tomb chapel, and it's airy, and there are beautiful columns, and there's art all over the walls. And the art are depictions of the deceased's family, of the things that they love to do. So you'll see music and dancing and pets and fishing and bird hunting and making beer and bread, all this fun stuff. Like, it's all the stuff they love to do. There's this one guy whose name was Beckett, and he has an entire wall with hundreds of wrestling holds, all these different wrestling holds depicted in art. And it was like looking at the ancient Egyptian ESPN moderator or like the gay pride parade leader or something. But that was what he loved. And that's why it was all over his tomb. And then there were really private parts of the tomb, which were about 18 to 20 feet below the ground. They would dig a shaft, and they would lower the coffin down and set it into a niche that was horizontal, parallel to the tomb floor. And that was the tomb chamber. And that was where the burial chamber, that was where the coffin sat with the mummy in it. And once it was placed, it was sealed up. That shaft was filled with debris and rock. And then that was sealed again with a big rock. And that was never meant to be disturbed. But of course, that's what Egyptologists take apart. And that's what Dawn and her old love, Wyatt, would have been doing. And what you see them doing in this book. What I found most interesting about Middle Egyptian tombs is that, unlike the tombs of, say, the Valley of the Kings, if you go to visit Tutankhamun's tomb, it's beautiful. But all the art are pictures of ancient Egyptian gods and goddesses. And that's not what you see in the Middle Kingdom tombs. What you see are pictures of family, of friends, of good times. And I think that is how you have a good life. I think, you know, if I were going to paint my tomb, I would have pictures of my dogs in it, you know? And I think it's figuring that out, you know, and it's kind of funny to be talking about this during a pandemic, to be honest. I mean, as you know, as a bookseller, nobody wanted to publish a book in a pandemic. But the more I think about it, the more I wonder if this is like the perfect pandemic book. Because I think all of us in the past 6 months have lost something. You know, maybe it was visiting your family. Maybe it was a wedding that you were going to have. In my case, it was an off-Broadway premiere of a musical. It could have been the ultimate sacrifice. You might have lost a person. And we are all wondering what the world might have been like if this hadn't happened. And that is exactly what Dawn does in the Book of Two Ways. She imagines the other life that she could have had and where she might have wound up.
Talk about the pandemic a little bit. I mean, I want to know about creativity.
Yeah,
every creative person is different when it comes to this. I mean, for me, I used to write through the toughest times of my life, and writing saved me. Mm-hmm. Now I'm not writing because I wanted to be at my bookstore. But come last March 14th, that was it. Our grown kids called us and said, you know, you guys can't be at the bookstore anymore. Everybody's coming in there hugging you. What are you thinking? You have to stop. And so that was the last date we were at the bookstore. And it's really a grieving process. I mean, I know I'll get back, but it's very hard. But what about you?
I mean, Judy, if you weren't such an awesome person, people wouldn't need to hug you all the time. So I think that one's on you. But I don't know about you. We're elbow bumping. I think that I'm curious to know did you write at all during the pandemic? Did you find it hard to be creative?
This time,
Yeah.
Yes, but then I'm not writing. So, right, okay. You know, there is this one little project that I have said for years now, if only I had 2 months somewhere, I could sit down and write this. So now I've had 6 months.
6 months. Have you written it?
No, I have not written it. I think a lot about it. I think a lot about it, but I have not written it.
And I kind of felt the same way. The funny thing was I was having this weird cognitive dissonance when this started because, you know, you can see this is my office behind me. On a good writing day, this is where I am. I am literally sitting here and I'm typing on my computer. It's not any different because I'm in a pandemic. I'm still in my house.
Yeah.
Still got myself in my office, right? Like this should not be so deeply affecting. And yet I was laid low at the beginning of this. I honestly could barely function. I couldn't really hold anything in my head. Forget writing. I couldn't even read. And there's never been a time in my life when I couldn't read. I would pick up a book. I would get distracted by the news. You know, I would pick up a book. I would get depressed. I couldn't do it. And it took me a good month before I could even pick up a book and get through it. And what got me through reading were romances. And it was because I needed a happy ending. I had to have one. And it has only been in the past couple of months that I am now reading widely again and reading everything. And I could read things that are sad and I could read things that are literary and I could read things that are mysteries and, you know, everything. But it took a long time for me to be able to wrap my head around that. And creating was kind of the same. So this book was kind of locked and loaded and we were ready to go and just planning the tour. And we didn't know what that was going to look like at the beginning of this. And at the very beginning of this, I did a lot of events like you are trying to help authors who suddenly found themselves doing Zoom tours. Mm-hmm. And I think the writing community has been crazy supportive, which is really nice. But my next book, my 2022 book, I'm co-writing it with Jenny Boylan, who you may know, who is a wonderful literary writer. And we had on the calendar this date in September that she was supposed to come to me and we were going to sit down and we were going to plot the whole structure of the book because we were going to write alternating narratives. And that day came and went and we already had a pretty much a first draft of the entire book done. Because in March, we kind of contacted each other and went, well, my whole schedule just cleared. What about you? And it was really interesting because, it was fun and it was productive to be able to brainstorm with her and to work through a very long and complex outline. It's a very difficult book to structure. But then I had to go and do research, which was hard in a pandemic. And then I had to get down to the business of writing. And I was like, I've forgotten how to write. I don't know how to do anything anymore. I'm a mess. And I actually went back to muscle memory. I've done so much research in my career that that's what I started with. I started reading. And I talked to lawyers who I've interviewed a million times for my books. And I talked to police officers. I did everything via Zoom. And the only thing that I did in person was go beekeeping, which also was important. And I managed to do that with a mask underneath my veil from 6 feet apart outside. I was like, all right, this is as safe as I can get for research. And, you know, I had to go through the motions before I remembered how to be a writer again. And by the time I got down to finally setting my hands to the keyboard and writing, I remembered how to do it. But it was really interesting because it was as if I'd forgotten everything. And I think the thing that really got me the most is I have friends who are writers and I would watch them post things on Twitter and be like, 5,000 words today. And, you know, and I also ran a half marathon and I was just like, who are you? And then I would write them privately and I'd be like, really? Are you actually creating right now? And they were like, oh God, no, I'm just writing that. And I said, well, that's not fair. That's dishonest. You know, and I have this newsletter that goes out to my readers once a month. And I always write a little newsletter, you know, like a little thing, a hello for me. And a couple of times during the pandemic, I've written and said, look, I'm going to give you real talk. I am really sad right now. And that is not my normal state. And this is hard for me. And, you know, I realize there are people who are experiencing things that are way worse than I am. But I think it's really important to be honest and to recognize that everyone is suffering. in some way, everyone is suffering a loss right now, and that's okay. You are allowed to be sad. You are allowed to grieve. You're allowed to read romance novels. You're allowed to not write whatever you were going to write in those 2 months. Times are not normal. We should not expect ourselves to be normal. And when I sent out that newsletter, I got, I think there was like 200 responses in 10 minutes from people saying, I'm so glad you said that. I thought it was just me. You know, and I think the weird thing about a pandemic is that creativity is something that's done very individually, but this pandemic has isolated us, and there's a difference between being isolated and being an individual. And I think that's where we're all sort of shocked and still caught in the headlights.
Yep. And the anxiety level. I mean, it's been very tough.
Yeah.
It's been tough. I think for most people, it's been tough.
And I have to say, the cool thing about doing these events, I mean, okay, I'm only on day two, but it's been so nice hearing from people who are like, oh my gosh, finally a book I can look forward to. Or, oh my God, I get to see you talk to Judy Blume tonight. It's going to be the high point of the pandemic. I love that we can give someone a tiny bit of joy. You know, that really does make me happy.
Well, let me just say that reading this book, I mean, it is, it's a love story.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful love story. And I love the way you do relationships. And I love the teenage daughter.
Mm-hmm. I bet you do.
Well, yeah, I do. I love all that. Yeah. So it's, you know, yes, there's Egypt, and yes, there's doula and hospice, but really the whole connection is the love story and the family story. So
yeah, it's kind of fun. You know, it really is. It's two love stories.
It is two
really,
love
when
stories.
You get down to it. And a woman trying to decide what she really wants in her life. And, you know, I think that one of the things that's really funny about this book is that when my husband read it, he was like stomping around in the kitchen. He was really angry. I was like, what is your problem? And he said, well, you seem to have a lot to say about married life. And I looked at him and I was like, don't you understand that you're Wyatt and Brian? And I don't know that he saw it that way.
That's good. Wyatt and Brian. But I think perfect.
When we talk about true love a lot, I do think you can have more than one soulmate. But I do think that when we talk about true love, it's not loving once, it's loving truly. You know, and I think that in Dawn's case, she really does love two men in very different ways. And the thing I love about Wyatt and Brian, I it's a little too early in the tour for me to say, okay, raise your hand. Let's do a poll.
No, Brian.
Who's Team Wyatt? Although I do want to know which one you are, Judy. But I think that, you know, they're very different men and they offer her very different things. Wyatt, who has missed a lot of time with her, basically says, you belong with me. I've missed a lot and I don't want to miss anything else. And is very demanding. And Brian is very hands-off and says, you know, you need to make a choice and I'm going to be here when you choose me. And you may not know it yet, but you're coming back for me. Like he's confident, you know, but he's saying, this is your choice. That's really attractive too. They're both very attractive. And, you know, we might want both of those things. And I think one of my favorite parts of the book is actually happens with Dawn and her client, Wynn, who is a woman who's dying, that she is a death doula. And they talk about how men have midlife crises and how it's almost expected that if men get to a certain age, they're going to go buy, you know, a sports car, or they're going to go take some crazy vacation, or they might have an affair. And like having a Y chromosome gives you the ability and the license to find yourself. But women are never given a chance to do that. We're expected to always be there for everyone else so they can find themselves. And why is that? And that's this really lovely little conversation between Wynn and Dawn in the book that is one of my favorite bits of the book.
Yes. I mean, wouldn't we all like to have that wonderful, stable, respectful, loving marriage and then be able to go off and, you know, have a thing with Wyatt.
Are you Team Wyatt or Team Brian?
No. I'm Team George. He's right here. He's my 40 years of everything I could possibly want. But you know, this is another life for me.
Yeah.
Because I had a life before George.
Mm-hmm.
Now this is the life, and this is the life that I choose and that I want.
I love that. I love that.
So I'm lucky. I'm very,
yeah, very lucky.
Yeah, I am. I am. And airplane crashes. Oh my God.
Yes.
Do we
want
to talk about airplane? You know, so I wrote this whole book.
I read that whole book.
But it was based on, it really happened.
I know. I remember reading really, that when the book came out.
Yeah, it really happened in my town when I was 14 years old. So did this make you scared of flying, writing about this?
Well, the funny thing is, you know, sometimes when I go on book tour, as you know, on a book tour, normally you spend your entire day getting from one place to another, which here's the silver lining about a Zoom book tour, that I'm not doing that. And my commute tonight
Absolutely.
Is about 20 steps, right? But usually I have a moment where I see somebody reading my book on a plane. And I remember thinking when I was writing this book, how weird that would be. If they were reading the beginning of the book, you know, where there's a plane crash on a plane. And I would definitely not tell them that I was the author of the book. But I did actually, I wrote parts of the plane crash on a plane when I was touring for my last book, which was very meta and weird and not cool. And I'm usually not afraid of flying, but then again, at the rate we're going, I'm not going to be flying until 2040. So who knows?
Yeah, who knows when we're going to be flying again. Right. I mean, having grown up with those plane crashes,
yeah,
and all of my friends who grew up with them, none of us are afraid to fly.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Which is interesting. My daughter became a commercial airline pilot.
Really? That's cool.
She's not now, but my brother was career Air Force, so I don't know. I don't know what that says, but anyway.
Well, you must have done the same research that I did, which was involved talking to people who are in the profession saying, okay, so help me crash a plane. This is what I need to have happen. And they're never too thrilled to talk about stuff like that.
No, they don't. But no, mine was all in newspapers because this happened in the
60s.
And so we had all the newspaper stories from it. But it's, sometimes, you know, in the bookstore, I like to make sure that it's okay for someone to buy that book. And, you know, I know that they're traveling. This book, The Book of Two Ways, is going to be just such a pleasure to sell in our store. We love it. It's already there. It came in yesterday.
Teen Jody could not imagine ever hearing those words coming out of Judy Blume's mouth. So thank you.
Oh, yes. Yes. It's wonderful. After 50 years, Jody, 50 years for me is enough years of writing. And to be able to now have a bookstore and introduce people to the writers that I love and books that they might not have read otherwise, it's very, and petting the books in the morning, oh, it's so exciting.
Love it.
That's what every bookseller has an expression for coming in and laying hands on the books. And I call it petting my books. That's what I do.
This is Bina, KALW series featuring artists and thinkers who've spoken at the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. Today's guest is author Jody Pico, whose new novel is The Book of Two Ways. She's joined in conversation by author Judy Blume. Bina is also available as a podcast, and you can find it at KALW.org.
Okay, so I wanted to jump in because we're going to try something different because this is 2020. After all, what could go wrong? But we're going to try and do some live questions because you have such amazing fans, and I would love for you guys to get a chance to see them. So I'm going to see if Marilyn Barron can jump on with us.
My question for Jody is, as Holly mentioned earlier in her introduction, you've written two young adult novels with your daughter that have been developed into a musical. What's it like collaborating with another author, especially your daughter? Does it change the quality or the nuance of your writing?
That's a great question. And I have to tell you that when I wrote those books with Sammy, We started when she was 13, and the idea, the seed of the book, it was her idea. And I thought it was brilliant. And I said, all right, let's do this together. And she really, she didn't know how to write a book. She was a phenomenal writer. And I said, I think this would be a really cool exercise. And because she had a day job, you know, she was a student, we worked on summer vacations. And we sat right here. I had my chair here, and then we pulled up another rolling chair right next to me. And we talked every word of those books out loud. One of us would type, we would take turns, and we spoke the entire book. And it was great because I think without knowing what I was doing, I was teaching her the way I write a book, because all writers work differently. So it felt really seamless, you know, because she was doing exactly what I usually do. And the interesting thing is it was hard. I mean, she knew it was hard. She toured 3 continents with me for the first book. And she kept saying, we're not writing a sequel. We're not writing a sequel, even though we totally left it for a sequel. And then she went to college and she called me up in January and she was like, I've been thinking about the sequel. And I was like, are you? Okay. And we actually wrote that book from 10 to midnight. For several days a week because she had classes and she had things going on, and we did it by speakerphone. So, you know, again, it was the same kind of process. So I didn't realize how easy that was until I started co-writing the 2022 book with Jenny Boylan. Jenny is a phenomenal writer, and I knew she was exactly who I wanted to work on this next book with, and I knew how we were going to structure it. We agreed on the plot. We, you know, the whole thing was fine. But I realized that the way Jenny writes, the actual physical way Jenny writes, is very different from how I write. Mm-hmm. She does what I would call a vomit draft. And then it takes like 3 or 4 drafts before it's even ready to show somebody. And so the first time she showed me her vomit draft, I was like, and she was like, oh, but this isn't done. I was like, oh, okay. You know, and I realized that I don't do that. I spend a lot of time crafting in my head, and I don't put something down on paper until I know I want to look at it. And I guess I didn't even know that about myself. So writing this new book has been a huge eye-opener for me, and learning how to collaborate with someone on a novel. The other thing that I get to do is write librettos with my co-writer. His name is Tim McDonald, and we've been working on musicals together, and that's a whole different experience. Mm-hmm. It's much more like working with Sammy. It's like having the other half of your brain in a different part of the room, you know, and you can think for each other. But they are, it's different every time collaborating. I mean, that's the best answer that I could give you.
Well, thank you so much.
I love that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marilyn. Okay, now the next question comes from Allison Harding.
So I've heard how you do your research and everything, but how do you develop your stories? Do you create a storyboard, mm-hmm. or do you start like writing a beginning, a middle, and an end, and then do you fill in the blanks? How do you create?
Judy, do you know the end before you start writing?
I'm more the vomit draft kind of girl. although I never thought to call it that because I'm phobic about vomit, so I would never name it that. But I usually know the day that I'm starting, the day that something different happens, and I think I know where I'm going, but I don't know anything else. Okay. And so it's all surprise to me. And that's the only fun I have with writing, the surprise.
So I always know where a book starts and I know where a book ends. And in this case, this is a very complicated structure of a book. So this book was a 95-page single-spaced outline. And I had embedded all the research in that outline so that I would be able to go back and pull from it the minute I needed it. And I had to do that because it was so complicated. And you'll see when you read the book that although the chapters alternate between Boston and Egypt, land and water, at times they cross. Someone described it today in an interview I did as fish jumping ponds. You know, so you might see a moment of Egyptology in Boston and you're like, wait, what? You know, or you might hear about Dawn's life as a death doula when she's in Egypt. And so it was very hard to keep that all straight because I'm old and I don't have many brain cells left. So I had to make sure I had a draft to follow. That said, this book had a completely different ending. Totally different. And my editor sent, you know, read the book. I love the book. But I'm wondering if, can you just change the entire ending? And I almost died. I was like, what? I thought you liked it. And it was really interesting because I was very angry. I was convinced she was wrong. It took me about a week to wrap my head around what she was really trying to say. And she was right in the long run. This is the right ending for the book, because I think it leaves you to debate what the answer is, which is the right way to do it. The ending I had was much sadder. So you can thank my editor that you will not be sobbing by the time you get to the end of the book. But it was totally different. I've never had to completely rewrite something like that.
So maybe then someday you'll be able to release the alternate ending when it's on, you know, the 140 print, right?
Like maybe. We'll see.
It would have been.
We'll see.
Oh, no. Jody, the next time I talk to you, I want to know what that ending is.
I will make sure to tell you. I will.
Okay, but very quietly. Yeah.
The book of two ways indeed, right? Yeah.
Thank you, Allison, so much. We appreciate your question.
Thank you.
So I'm going to bring on somebody else now, and this is Master Sergeant Nubia Simmons. She is at Ramstein Army Base in Germany. It is 3:00 in the morning.
Yes, ma'am.
It is. My gosh.
And wow. Not only that, here's what she is such a fan. I'm going to let Nubia tell you what an incredible fan she is of hers. Yeah. Explain why, Nubia, and show us, if you will.
Yes. Okay.
Leaving Time was the most impactful book I've ever read in my life. And because of that, I did get a few tattoos. And that,
oh my gosh. I don't know
if you can see it, but there's a baby elephant there.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, I see.
Really bad. Anyways, but... then there's,
those are all of your books, Jody. All of your books are tattooed on her in some way or another.
Are you kidding? Oh my gosh. I am so honored. Thank you. Yeah. That is lovely. I also want to say thank you for your service. I really appreciate it. And I cannot believe it's 3 a.m. for you. I hope you're not doing anything really important tomorrow. So.
A little bit.
But. Okay. All right.
So Nubia, go ahead and ask your question to Jody.
So I wanted to ask if you would ever consider writing a book in collaboration with military women on matters such as female integration into combat units, sexual assault, sexual harassment, PTSD, and the higher divorce rates that women face being a military wife and a civilian husband or dual military.
So that's a great question. And I have been asked before by other people in the military to cover some of those topics. It is not my story right now. And I think for many people who have lived through it, I do believe it's their story to write, even if it's something that's not published. Writing is something that really helps you sort of figure things out in your head a lot of the time. And it's an exercise to make sense of things. So even if you're not thinking with a goal of publishing, it might be a way of processing something that you've lived through. I would say next time you want to stay up till 3 a.m, maybe write something down instead of watching us. But thank you again for staying up, for all of those beautiful tattoos, and for doing what you do.
Thank you. You too. Thank you.
Thank you, Master Sergeant, for your service. We appreciate you, and stay safe over there.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Our next question comes from Cherry Aviv.
Hi. Hi, Jody and Judy.
Hi.
So it was wonderful for you to share what it was like for you with this pandemic. And this book was already done and you're already working on your next book. But is there anything during this time period that sparked the essence of a story? Because it's also about choices people are making. And I didn't know if it's inspired you somehow.
So the answer to that is yes, but in a really interesting way. I personally, as a novelist, believe that the pandemic is going to be a lot like 9/11 in fiction. Like Jenny and I, in setting our book, moved it back a year because honestly, we just did not want to deal with quarantine. And I was like, that's not what this story is about. Let's pretend they don't know what's coming. And I think that after 9/11, it took writers time to let it breathe inside of them and to understand what had happened and how to portray it in fiction, in a novel. There's something very permanent and lasting, I think, about a novel. I didn't feel ready. I don't feel ready yet to talk about this pandemic in a novel. But at the same time, I really believed that there was a need to chronicle what we are going through while we are going through it. And I was very grateful that I've been working in another medium, musical theater, because I think that is the right medium to be talking about this. Theater is a shared emotional experience. And what is a better metaphor for that idea of emotion and isolation at the same time? And my co-writer and I came up with this idea of creating five vignettes that are all about different relationships and how they're affected by the pandemic. Each vignette has a different pair of songwriters that has created music for it. Some are funny and like a rom-com. Some are very sad. One is about the protests after the George Floyd murders. It runs the whole gamut of all these people and how their relationships have been affected. And right now it's actually in the process of being workshopped. I have a meeting after this, as a matter of fact, with Chico State University, where they're learning one of the songs tonight. And we hope to do is to get some Broadway talent to record it somewhere and to stream it on the service before this pandemic is over. We wrote it very quickly because it was speaking to all of us at this moment. And there's something about being able to capture this in a theatrical experience while it's happening with a message of hope at the end that just felt right to me in a way that a novel didn't yet. So I guess that's the answer.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
Thank you, Sherry. Okay, next we have Judy Feldstein, and she has a question for you. And I think that's a brilliant idea. I hope they get that out soon. We could all use something like that.
Yeah.
Something.
Thank you. Have any of your books dramatically changed your thinking on a subject?
Yes. And I'm kind of glad you asked me this question because it's a good day for this. Small Great Things is my favorite book. And it was also the hardest book for me to write. It is about white privilege and growing up with white privilege in this country and how a lot of white people will not acknowledge that privilege. And when I started writing that book, I found out so many unflattering things about myself. I thought I was a really good person. I would have told you I was not a racist. I was absolutely wrong. Because if you're born with skin the color that ours is right now on this panel, doors open for you and life is different. And if you're born with black skin, it's not like that. And if anyone wants to say that's not true, I would urge you to just look at the news today and what happened with the lack of indictments in Breonna Taylor's murder case. I always say, as a result of that book, this is the way I think about race and racism. We think about white supremacists being racist. And a white supremacist is the person who gets on that moving walkway at the airport and keeps walking with their bag. So they get to the other side faster. If you're an ordinary white person, you stand on that moving walkway with your bag. You're still going to get to the other side. If you want to be anti-racist, you actually have to turn around and run twice as hard. And that is a lesson that I think a lot of white people don't like to think about, because we prefer to believe that if we succeed, it's because of luck or hard work. And there are a whole bunch of systems in place in this country that make it so that people of color do not have the same opportunities that we do. It's harder for them to succeed. So that book for me was life-changing. It changed who I am. It changed how I see the world. It changed how I interact with the world. And it changed with the way I talk about racism. I never really bothered to talk about it before. You know why? Because I have white privilege and I don't have to. And I'm really proud of that book right now. I know a lot of people are reading it. And I think there are a lot of people in this country who are maybe opening their eyes for the first time and starting to understand that there is systemic racism. And maybe they don't know where to start and they don't feel comfortable grabbing a book by, say, Ibram Kendi off a shelf yet. But I like to think Small Great Things is the stepping stone. Read it. You know my work. You trust me to take you through a tough situation. So read it and learn what it's like to have white privilege. Acknowledge that you have some. And then go talk to someone who is Black and who has lived as a Black person in America and read their work. Fiction writers, Ta-Nehisi Coates, Ibram Kendi, you name it. There are so many amazing writers out there. I can't tell you what it's like to be Black in America, but I can tell you what it's like to be white. And that's going to be the first step.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Good to see you. Okay, so let's bring on next. We have questions from Wendy and Rachel Bierman. And while they're getting on the screen, Judy, do you have a favorite book of yours that you've written?
No.
Really?
What I always say to kids, because they always ask me that question, is that each one, they're like my babies. You know, some days I like this one better. Some days I like this one better. But yeah, I mean, if you forced me to say, of course, I would say Margaret and Sally Friedman and Fudge. I mean, you know, the books that brought me my readers and the books that were so much.
We won't tell anybody. Your secret's safe.
Don't tell anybody.
Hi, Wendy. Hi, Rachel.
Hi.
In full disclosure, Wendy's a friend of mine. So hi. What's your question? Go ahead.
Yes. Well, hi, Jody and Judy. And I love both of those books and Small Great Things. And I'm a nurse. So that book really meant a lot to me too. So. But my question for you is this book, your new book seems to be about, you know, other roads you might have taken in life, and what if you took the other road? So if you chose not to take the road as a writer, what would you have done in your life?
That's a great question. And it's funny because I think about this. I've been thinking a lot about, you know, where were the splitting points in my life? And there definitely were some, you know, if I hadn't gone to Princeton and worked with Mary Morris, I know I wouldn't be here today. If my college boyfriend hadn't completely broken my heart, I would not have reached out to this friend of mine on the rowing team and wound up dating him. And I would, if the stock market hadn't crashed in October of 87, I wouldn't have moved to Massachusetts and married him. And if I had not left teaching to have my first son, I probably would have continued to be a teacher. And so I would, if I were not writing, I would say chances are excellent that I would be running a Zoom classroom. So maybe it wouldn't be that different than what I'm doing right now. I don't know that I'd have 1,000 people in my class, but but that's what I would be doing. I'd probably be teaching. Judy, what about you? What would you have been?
I don't know. I was trained to teach, but I never taught because, you know, in those days I married so young and had babies right away. And then I started writing. So as George likes to say, Judy's never had a job.
I would argue that you have been teaching. I think you've been teaching a lot of people your whole life without even realizing it.
And I would argue that her job is harder than anybody else's.
Yes. Yeah.
But, you know, that it's what was inside me. I mean, it's what came spontaneously. And that's the best. That's the best.
Love it. But thank you. Thank you, Wendy and Rachel. Good to see you.
Thank you.
Thank you, ladies. We appreciate it. We love you and stay safe.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Have a good night, buddy.
See you.
Bina is a co-production of the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco and KALW. For more information about programs at the JCCSF, you can visit jccsf.org. Today's guest was author Jody Pico, whose new novel is The Book of Two Ways. She was joined in conversation by author Judy Bloom. I'm David Kwan, editor and producer of the program, and Tina Pamintuan is the executive producer. Our theme music is from the album Masada Rock by the Rashanim Trio, and the music you're hearing right now is by John Zorn. Bina is available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org. Thanks for listening.